Good morning. You're listening to Central Wisconsin's 24-hour information station, WFHR. It's time now for the Morning Magazine.
Welcome, everybody, to Morning Magazine for this December 16th, 2022. 10:05 on the clock, and you have your host, James J. Maloff, here. At 10:30, we're going to welcome in Reverend Beth Habhager and Mike Barnes, and we're going to talk with them about Wisconsin Rapids Moravian Church, along with the Winter Market. Right now, joining us on the phone, Wisconsin State Senator Patrick Teston. Good morning, sir.
Hey, James. How are you?
Doing good. How have you been?
Been staying busy. Looking forward to the holiday season here, but then more importantly, we're back in session January 3rd, and so there's going to be a lot of work to be done as the legislature reconvenes with all the new members, and we get back to work.
Well, talk about that in a little bit, and got a couple of other things I wanted to go over with you. But first up, kind of rewinding a little bit, because just a little while ago, you were given the award for Friend of Housing Award as senator, and I wanted to congratulate you for that. I think that is wonderful. I wanted to touch on that and why the WBA gave this award to you and what it means to you.
Yeah, I was really honored to receive the Housing Award from Wisconsin Builders Association for legislation that we've supported to, make housing more affordable here in the state, and also try and remove some of the burdens and hurdles of trying to get new construction here in the state, because that really is a bottleneck right now in the state of Wisconsin. I mean, we have a lack of inventory. We have a shortage of affordable and working class housing here in the state. And so anything that we can do to alleviate that goes a long way to ensure that, one, we're allowing people to pursue the American dream of having their own home, and second, doing what we can to attract people from outside of the state to hopefully set up shop and roots right here in Wisconsin, and particularly right here in central Wisconsin.
Sir, I know that you're a huge fan of ours in this show, so you listen to all the Morning Magazine episodes, so you know, I'm kidding, I'm joking, busy guy, I know you can't listen to any, but we do this show every month on Morning Magazine where we bring on J.R. Seward and Let's Talk Real Estate, and J.R. incredibly in tune with this industry, has grown up in it, been in it for 30 years, and well, one of the most common themes over the years we've been having this conversation is inventory, that we just it's the lack of inventory and not having housing. And honestly, I come from a construction background, but between you and I, sir, I have never really looked at buying a house because I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to. I just kind of assumed, well, me, my bracket, I'm probably never going to be able to afford a home. Talking with JR, talking with you right now, it brings this conversation back up where this is a huge concern, certainly within this state. What was the legislation you passed, and how do you think that this can be improved going forward?
Well, there were several bills that were that we supported in the legislature that the WBA supported, and it ranged on a whole host of different areas and different fronts, whether it was promoting legislation to promote youth apprenticeship programs and provide more opportunities for that as it relates to the workforce, supporting legislation that would provide more opportunities for home buyers to basically first-time home buyers when they purchase older homes to help rehabilitate them and actually help raise home values. And so, when you mention, you don't think you'd ever have the opportunity to own a home, that's one of the things that, we've heard from a lot of people. And, when you take a look at the inventory that we have here in the state, there are a lot of older homes. I mean, I look at the home my wife and I bought back in 2015. It was built back in 1969, and it's an older home, but we've made significant updates and changes to it, which has increased its value. But we really like to make that more affordable for others. And so one of the proposals that we have championed in the past is that for some of these older homes and for first-time home buyers, incentivizing them to purchase older homes, but then also to give them tax credits to help update those homes, which is really a win-win because, one, people get to have the home that they really want, and second, it increases the home values, which actually helps with our tax base within our various communities. So it's one of those areas where sometimes you got to think outside the box and put forward ideas that traditionally maybe haven't always been thought about in that way.
Yeah, you know, one of the first things I thought of talking with JR and when this conversation, when I was diving into this weekend for our interview today, one of the first things that popped my head, if you're a homeowner, you're a taxpayer. And that immediately helps out your, not only, as you said, the value of homes in not just where you are, but of course your neighborhood and so on, but you are putting into your state, you're putting into your city. These are good things. We need more homeowners. We should want more people owning homes. And it sounds like through this process, through some of that legislation, maybe in going forward, we see more of this. And to your point also, more builders in this state, because that's, I think, the thing that gets lost in the shuffle a little bit in this conversation. We can do all we want helping people be able to afford homes, but if there are no homes for them to move into, it's not going to matter. So that's the other part of this, too, that I appreciate the kind of 2-3-prong attack with this.
Well, absolutely. And I mean, so oftentimes when we're talking about some of these, you know, big issues, whether it's housing, whether it's workforce, I mean, I think there's a misconception out there that we can solve these issues with one piece of legislation, or as I like to call it, the silver bullet approach. And unfortunately, that's just not the case. Oftentimes, these issues they're multifaceted, and so you've got to take a number of different angles and approaches, and take a holistic view at how we address some of these challenges that we face. And so that's oftentimes why, you know, people will take a look at legislation and say, well, this only tackles one piece. It's like, well, absolutely, because we're dealing with a giant jigsaw puzzle that is state government and the state of Wisconsin. So we got to piece together all the pieces, and so we have a clear picture, and we're doing what we can to address any issues on a whole host of different fronts.
You've got to there's this thing when it comes to politics as well, too. Legislation is only part of the step. It takes us as human beings, as citizens, to enact that stuff, to make that stuff work as well. There's this almost, you have to be 18 to vote, yet there's this childish approach to voting sometimes that I voted or this was passed, that's all that needs to be done. That's where it begins. Then it's on human beings, citizens, to, you know, do something with this legislation, to actually make this, you know, put it into action and make it happen.
Absolutely.
I imagine that you're wherever you keep all of your awards, you've had to make some room recently because we got a couple of these here. You were also honored recently with the Building Wisconsin Award from the Wisconsin Builders Association. Can you tell us what that award is and what it meant to you?
Yeah, so the Wisconsin Builders Association, you know, they're a great organization of contractors and developers from all around the state. And again, you know, it's from all of our work throughout the years and this past session, especially as it relates to, you know, workforce and doing what we can to get more people into the trades and making it easier and expanding educational opportunities. And then again, also making sure that we're providing regulatory certainty for industry and for contractors and builders. And so, you know, I think it's in line, too, with, you know, our continued work from my On the Job series as well. And so, prime example, just last Friday, I was working with Hooper Construction. They're one of the contractors who are working on the Farming for the Future Foundation project in Plover. I was actually installing the HVAC systems in there, which was a ton of fun, and I learned a lot working alongside the pipe fitters and the tin workers, and so it's always great to be recognized, but it's really, for me, it's more about the actual rolling up our sleeves and putting forth good legislation that helps organizations like the WBA and others, because that's really what this is about. And it's about doing what we can to make Wisconsin the best place to live, work, and raise a family.
Awards are nice. It feels good to be recognized, but I see your point that the point of the award, the point of this, is to bring attention to this subject.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm.
You also recently had a couple of families come by the governor's over there in Madison. You back in November, at the end of November, you had the Zachmans from Amherst and the Beagleys from Toma honored with the Governor's Adoptive Parent Award. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how that felt? Because just seeing some of the pictures and reading a little bit about that story, that seemed like a really nice moment for both you and those families.
Yeah. So the Governor's Adoption Awards, you know, it's a very prestigious honor. It really is to recognize those families out there who have taken in foster children, and oftentimes from very heartbreaking environments and where there's broken families and issues of mental health, substance abuse. And what's really great about the Governor's Adoption Awards is that these parents are recognized by other foster parents or from, county health departments. And I was really honored that we had two families from the 24th Senate District who were recognized. And so I was fortunate to be down in Madison that day. And so we had, like I said, two families from the 24th, one from the 71st Assembly District, and one from Representative Nancy Vandermeer's district. And so I was fortunate. We had worked it out with both Representative Shankland and Representative Vandermeer's office that we had also do citations to recognize them, because what's really cool about this is that they'll have the families come down, and usually it's held in the assembly chambers. And what's so neat is that oftentimes they're down there with their foster kids and their other children, and you got little kids running around all around the assembly chambers, and you know, everyone's just having a great time. Mm-hmm. And you know, what's so great about this award ceremony is that when these families get the award, they get a chance to say a few words. And the number one takeaway is that these individuals are 100% selfless. Mm-hmm. I mean, they aren't doing this to be recognized. They're doing this because their heart's in the right place. They want to help children in tough situations, really have the opportunity and chance to be successful and have, you know, a better start. And oftentimes, while working with the birth parents, to hopefully also get them, you know, back on the right path, and with the hopes of ultimately reunification. And you know, in some cases it happens, others it doesn't. But it just goes to show that we have tremendous individuals in the state who, you know, never hesitate to step up and help those in need, especially those who are the most vulnerable, which is oftentimes young children.
We were talking about this earlier this week on the morning show. It's so unique, adoption. And obviously, adoption's been around for, you know, centuries, a long time. But, you know, it's an issue in society, or it could be a bigger issue in society, but it's something that we as human beings figured out a long time ago, you know, some of the ways to make this work. Now, there are certainly some, you know, other things that have took some work over the years to make adoption really, you know, stronger and what it is today and hopefully going forward. But it is one of the most, you know, beautiful things about our society, I think, that we have something where, you know, where can these kids go? Who's going to take in these kids? And then you've got these families, they're complete strangers when they meet, and they create these bonds, this love, this ability where these kids grow up, become good citizens, and are able to contribute to the world. Where, you know, without this system, who knows what would happen? We're so close to it, and it's been going on for so long. I think we, all of us, you know, myself included, are guilty of this, of taking it a little lightly. But these kind of stories and bring attention to this kind of thing is so noteworthy, and it speaks to the hope that, you know, this season really has, but just that we should have every day, especially with this subject. It was a very cool moment.
Well, and absolutely, it's also an opportunity to showcase and highlight that, you know, there are still a huge shortage of, you know, individuals out there that are needed to mm-hmm. step up and become foster parents and adopt and, you know, really just provide a safe haven for some of these kids. So there's a huge demand, especially here in places like Portage County, Wood County, Adams County. I mean, they you know, signs and advertisements for it. And so, you know, if that's something, if there are any listeners out there who have any interest, you know, reach out to your county Child Protective Services and health departments to get signed up and see if it's something that might be a good fit for you, because it ultimately, you could have the opportunity to fundamentally change someone's life for the better.
Speaking with Wisconsin State Senator Patrick Teston, let's get to you on the job series. You touched on one of those jobs just a little bit earlier, but kind of just looking into your recent actions and everything, and I noticed that you were hanging out with a new friend of ours, Taylor from Allison Dairyland, and you guys were talking about potatoes, but there was another thing that I saw after that about Wisconsin and Christmas trees, and that I did not know. Wisconsin is one of the leaders in Christmas trees, is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, Wisconsin is known for a lot of great egg commodities. Well, they're obviously dairy, Here in the central Wisconsin, we're known for our potatoes and vegetable growers, corn, obviously, carrots, cranberries, and some of the other specialty crops. But little known fact that Wisconsin is actually one of the largest producers of Christmas trees. And, you know, a couple of years ago, I got to work at a Christmas tree farm just outside of Toma. And, you know, it's really one of those, you know, you don't think about it because usually, you know, for those of us that use natural trees, it's always kind of fun and tradition where you go out to the tree farm, cut down your own tree or go to the lot and pick one up. But really, it's an ag business, and it requires, you know, tree farmers to take care of their crop and, you know, make sure that the trees are healthy and they continue to plant and regrow. And so Wisconsin, I believe, is number 5th in the nation for Christmas tree production. And so it's one of those little known facts that we just wanted to highlight, and especially with the Christmas right around the corner here. And as I mentioned, too, last Friday, worked with Hooper Construction at the Farm for the Future Foundation, which is on the south side of Plover, just off the interstate, south of Lake Pakawa in the Korean War Memorial. And I'm really excited about this project that's being spearheaded by the Velsky family of Heartland Farms and a coalition of other ag industries and farms from the area and around the state. And what's so great about this is that once it's completed, it's really going to be used as an educational center where school groups and kids and tourists can come in and really get a better understanding of what goes into getting our food from the field to the table. And also, it's going to be an opportunity to introduce kids to agricultural jobs and prospective careers. So it's really a testament to the vision that the Farmer for the Future Foundation has to really preserve and highlight and educate individuals on our rich history of agriculture here in the state, because by and large, less and less people are involved in the ag industry. And when you take a look that, you know, I'm probably 4 or 5 generations removed from a farm, I think that's the case for many people. A lot of folks don't have a true understanding of where their food comes from. And so I think a project like this is going to go a long way to ensure our rich agricultural history here in the state remains thriving, not just for the next few years to come, but for generations to come.
Yeah, and something else really sparks to me about this, as you touch on that with the ag industry, and we you're absolutely right. We understand how vital it is that we get young blood into these industries. I think about it just maybe that first and foremost, but kind of 1B, 1C to that is our you know, police departments, our firefighters, our EMTs, politicians, certain jobs that in society, especially the last 5-6 years, we've really, like, the only time you hear about these jobs is usually in a negative light. And if I'm a young kid growing up, and that's all I ever see is all these positions being brought up in negative lights, why would I want to do that job? So how are we creating new people in these industries if we're not treating them with honest, you know, clarity? If all we're doing is giving negative, in, you know, because there's good and bad, and I'm not saying that we shouldn't cover negative stories. We have to have accountability. But you can do both. You know, we know that there's plenty of news outlets that can do both. It's vital that we learn to do that going forward. Otherwise, who's going to want to do these jobs? I mean, sir, I know you ain't that old yet, but you're not going to be able to do this forever. we're going to need young people to be able to do this stuff. It's vital that we learn how to balance this with not just ourselves, but with our news outlets and just the way we cover these subjects, cover these fields.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. And, you know, that's one of the things that I've really been impressed by over the last several years is that there's been a much more proactive conversation as it relates to, you know, for instance, here in the Central Sands, you know, groundwater has been a huge topic of the conversation, whether we're talking quantity and quality. And for years, agriculture and conservation groups were kind of at each other's throats. And now we're at a point where they're actually having conversations and working together collaboratively on a host of different projects throughout the area that really aim to highlight all the good that's being done from both sides of the equation and working in unison to address issues that are affecting individuals in places like central Wisconsin. And so, you know, it goes back to that. My whole philosophy is that find the common ground and build upon it, and it yields results. And, you know, when you take a look at the work that's being done at the Farmer for the Future Foundation, I think it's going to go a long way to continuing that narrative in this this tradition of working collaboratively and working in unison to address issues and highlighting, you know, where we can do better, what we can do better, and then more importantly, putting our best foot forward to address these issues and highlighting a tremendous asset to our area, which is the egg industry.
Mm. Reading from your newsletter that was released yesterday, you are going to be serving on the legislature's powerful joint committee on finance in the upcoming session. This committee is responsible for all state appropriations and expenditures, including the state budget. First off, congratulations. What does this mean to you, and what is the work that needs to be done going forward?
Yeah, so I'm really excited to have been appointed to the Joint Finance Committee. This the Joint Finance Committee is comprised of members from both houses, the Republicans and Democrats, and it's tasked with essentially crafting the next state budget. And so it's one of the most powerful legislative committees in the entire country. And as some who have served on this committee previously, they often call it the master's class or master's course on state mm-hmm. government, because you are essentially in an elevated position when it comes to state government and the finances of state government. So what I'm most excited about is the opportunity to have a seat at the table as we go into this next biennium and to offer my input and my perspectives as it relates to not just my district, but, you know, my experiences, whether it's working with different organizations and groups in my tenure in the state Senate, to offer a voice for central and western Wisconsin. And I'm really excited. It's a lot more work, and you know, it's going to be interesting to see how things play out, because obviously we still have a split government with Governor Evers and his administration and the Republican controlled legislature. But I do think there's going to be ample opportunity for us to again find common ground and put forth a budget and that's going to ensure Wisconsin remains on a fiscally strong footing, but also making sure that we're helping out in areas, whether it's related to K-12 education, infrastructure, broadband, and then increase in affordability for healthcare for Wisconsinites all across the state, especially in underserved areas.
And there's certainly the retirement obligations and things like that that are important and need to be addressed as well. You know, I'm looking forward to next month we get together again, and maybe we can dive into this subject a little bit more. I think that it's one that everybody could use a little more of information about, and a little more kind of like, hey, this is stuff that isn't necessarily in the headlines kind of thing, and have that discussion. I'm looking forward to that, especially, you know, let you get your feet wet here in the job and everything a little before we dive too deeply into it. I'm looking forward to that. And certainly when we get back together again, talking about, you know, the new session and what's to come and what you and your colleagues are hoping to achieve. But, sir, we've been doing this a while now. You know how this works. I have to ask you hard questions every once in a while. So here comes my hard question. Do you have a favorite Christmas movie?
Favorite Christmas movie?
Yeah, putting you on the spot. You right on the spot.
All right, well, this is going to be controversial, but I'm a firm believer this is a Christmas movie, but I got to go with Die Hard.
Yes. I agree with you. Christmas movie. 100% I agree with you. That's hilarious. I didn't see that coming. That's a good choice. That's a good choice. I like that. Yippee-ki-yay. That's a good one. Anything with Bruce Willis, I'm always going to be on board. So you had me there right away. Sir, we have appreciated all year you joining us, the conversations we've had. You and I don't always see it eye to eye, but we always end our conversations like this. I appreciate that from you, and I wish you and yours a very, very happy holidays. Enjoy your Christmas. We'll talk again next year.
Hey, I appreciate it, James, and Merry Christmas to you as well. Have a Happy New Year, and to all the listeners out there, wishing you all a very, very Merry Christmas, and have a safe New Year, and we'll chat next month.
You take care, sir. We'll talk soon.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Always appreciate the time with Senator Teston. Thank you for the conversation. We'll talk to him next year. For now, we're going to get out of the way. We're going to bring in some great guests coming up in part two right here on Morning Magazine at WFHR.